All right. I don't even care much about what I sound like. I think we'll be all right.
Okay, good.
Where do we start? Let's see. Well, you're not a folklorist.
No.
How did you get into this racket?
Okay, well, that story started about 8 years ago when I came to White Springs to fill out a grant obligation, which was to be the artist in residence. And I've been in the area now for about 10 years. But the 8 years prior to getting a position with the Folklife Program, I was the artist in residence, and my job was to teach a lot of traditional craft structures in the community, like basketry, quilting, weaving, doll making, broom making, lye soap making, spinning, natural dyeing, things of that nature. And so, like, Peggy came here when I had been maybe 4 years on the job, and so I kind of got introduced to folklore through Peggy and her involvement with the program, and then started working sort of with the folk festival and things that were related to crafts, particularly traditional applications of crafts.
So you came to White Springs before you were working for the Folklife Center. You were working
right. In fact, the Folklife Center didn't exist. Mm-hmm. This was in the Stephen Foster Memorial.
Mm-hmm. Where were you before this?
Tallahassee.
Oh. That's where you were for, what, 8 years or so, you said, working there?
No, I worked here on the grant for 8 years before becoming a member of the staff. Mm-hmm. So I've been with the program 2 years now, really since the program began. My grant kind of ended at the same time the program began, and there was an extra position on the program, and I interviewed for that position and was really fortunate, you know, to get the position. I've kind of learned a lot about folklore since I've been with the program and through the staff members that are folklorists.
But do you function some as, you must function as a folklorist in some ways.
Well, in a lot of respects. For example, I do a lot of the field work associated with the festival or with various projects. My first year, the major project I worked on was the basketry exhibit, Florida Basketry Continuity and Change, and I was involved with some of the field work on that, but most directly was involved with putting the whole thing together. So that was like my first introduction to field work, and then from that being involved with folklife areas. And even before I was on the staff, I worked with Peggy developing some of the folklife areas and learning how to do interviews and work in the field and tell the differences between tradition bearers and those who are interpreters of tradition.
That's an interesting point. Can you talk a little bit about that? You shouldn't have seen. You bring something like that up. Or would you rather not get into that? I know that's, and it's been covered in some other interviews. And we can do it.
Well, I have a feeling that's been pretty well covered by just about everyone you've talked with. So.
Yeah, it's just that it's a hot object.
Topic
right now. Well, talk about field work. Field work covers a multitude of
It does. Okay, I know you've been involved in it, too. For example, this year, Doris and I have been working on a grant project funded through American Express to document Seminole basketry traditions and Seminole patchwork traditions. So we had two sessions of field work involved with that project of 1 week each. And during each of our field work trips, we went to South Florida. We went on the reservations. There are five reservations. We made our basic contacts and from that found the people that we wanted to actually interview, and we set up those interviews, interviewed in the field, not in ideal conditions like this, and brought all those tapes plus documentary slides and photographs back, and from that we're putting together a slide tape program, one on the basketry and one on the Seminole patchwork, and that's in the works now.
Tell me, I want to get specific now.
Tell me some
great stories. What kind of problems do you run into when you get into field work? I know it's just amazing.
Okay, well, there are all kinds. A lot of times you're just not prepared for the situation. Mm-hmm. Okay, you may walk in totally cold to a situation, and all of a sudden you realize you have got a tape recorder that depends on electricity, and there is none. So then you have to quick think about going switching over to batteries. Then you discover that the person you really need to talk with was not the person you originally set out to interview, but the person you need to talk with doesn't speak English. So then you have to quick go out, find somebody who's willing to serve as an interpreter, and in the meantime you're trying to explain what it is you're doing and why, and you realize you've only got 2 hours to do this whole thing in, plus you've just driven, what, X number of miles, so I don't know if this is the kind of story you want to get at, but that sort of thing happens. I can't think of anything really I'm using, let me just take a quiet moment and see. You know, there have to be a million good stories.
Well, you run into so many characters. Well, you know, of course, there's stories that you don't really want to tell, like Joe Jumper and all that business.
Yeah. Oh, I know, the Betsy story. Yeah. Yeah, well, Betsy had some good ones.
Did you ever get any of those black places in Pensacola?
No,
With Ida.
Yeah, with Ida and with Mary McLean, I'm sure there's some real good ones. Most of the people I've done work with are people who are involved with material culture, basket makers, quilt makers, doll makers, needle workers. I helped out last year with the research we did in Pensacola and then in Masaryktown with the Czechoslovakian community. We're just starting to plan our field work for this year, and I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do.
It must scatter you out a lot working in a state like Florida where you have so many different traditions. Is it a difficult matter to get well-versed before you go to a place to find out what's going on?
Well, that's the hardest part. First of all, because Florida's so big, and even though I've lived in Florida quite a long time, I haven't been to a lot of the places, just figuring out how to get around. Plus, working in and working with people whose skills are skills that I'm not familiar with demands, like, some research and some time. And our big problem, I think, with our program is having enough time to do it all and having time for your personal life. Because you could be in Pensacola one day and Key West the other, and we're talking about a big, broad difference in miles. And we are trying to cover the state fairly systematically. And as a state agency, need to have, like, a broad overview of what the state holds. It's hard to do. We have limited time and limited funds.
One thing I notice about field work is, you mentioned personal life, you really have to throw all your personal feelings out the window, don't you, when you're getting in the middle of field work?
Right. Well, one of the things I've had to learn, and this may be of interest to you, is learning to not carry my aesthetic values with me when looking at another person's craft work, and almost taking on an alternative aesthetic view in order to be objective. And I think the hardest thing you have to learn is non-subjectivity, because it is very difficult. You have a set of values, you've grown up with them, but as a folklorist or as a member of this staff, you're working with all kinds of people. And for example, I've worked with quilters who work with polyester, and you know, as that's kind of offensive to my own aesthetic nature, but I can accept that, you know, and deal with it from the space that person is coming from. And that's been one thing that's been real interesting to learn. I'm sure the same applies to people who are working with, you know, people who deal with music. Foodways, of course, we know. We all love. Go into the field and eat.
Go thou into the field. Well, are folklorists trained, or do they have... Are they prepared for that in their classes? I guess that's what
right.
I'm asking. They're taught.
Folklorists receive very specific training. I've been receiving on-the-job training, which in some ways is really terrific. I mean, it's like a lot of practical experience. What I don't have is a good firm background of the subtleties, and that I'm having to pick up on my own. My background has been in crafts. I've worked with crafts all my life. My degree was in constructive design, which is the study of crafts, and I was always particularly interested in traditional structure. And I'm also an artist. I'm a weaver, so I have a fairly good understanding of at least the fiber arts, both traditional and contemporary. But the folklorist is prepared for looking at culture as a broad kind of study, whereas my background has been very limited to crafts, and as a folklorist would look at material culture, it's very, very different from the way I would look at it as an artist and with training in that field. I mean, the whole thing of just doing away with your own personal aesthetic is probably a real good place to start when examining the artifacts that would come from other cultures or other situations.
I wonder if there are any folklorists now coming from more ethnic cultures that would have even more of a problem opening up. It's something for you to have to do, but you've had a fairly
right.
broad experience even growing
right.
up.
Right. Landon, I'm sure that's true, and I'm sure that that's a question that Peggy
wow.
to, what? You can talk.
12 o'clock.
12 o'clock, okay.
We're ready to go eat.
Almost.
Next. Okay, well, yeah. Anyway, that's a question that Peggy, one of our folklorists that's more knowledgeable about that. I don't know a lot of the national people that are folklorists. I'm starting to recognize names and starting to know who does what, but that, it's just not a question I can answer. I don't have the knowledge of that.
What does it mean to people to do crafts? What's the point of making a basket besides having something to carry some apples around?
Okay, well, there are a lot of different reasons, and one of the reasons may be totally as a work-related item. For example, it may be part of somebody's livelihood. For example, Lucretti at one time produced her cotton baskets for the production and gathering of cotton on the plantations. And today, Lucretti still makes baskets, but they're baskets made for sale, whereas some of the contemporary artists that I work with that are not tradition bearers, but people who are just interested in traditional structures, produce baskets for personal reasons, just for personal gratification. And also, there are professional basket makers, too. I mean, it's kind of for personal a combination of personal enjoyment, pure pleasure, and profit motive.
Just the same as anybody does anything.
Yeah, right.
It's not removed.
Right. But handicrafts in Florida, just that whole idea, Florida has attracted so many retirees that handicrafts has taken on a whole sort of new idea with lots of senior citizens groups and retiree communities focusing on handicrafts for leisure activities and then handicrafts as a possible means for supplementing income. And I think you've probably been aware that over the past 10 years, the crafts movement, well, just in the United States, has had like a major impact in terms of festivals, sidewalk sales, galleries, cooperatives, things of that nature that have kind of sprung up overnight. I'm not sure what the changing economy is going to do to that whole structure, but I know there are a lot of people who've gotten into crafts with the idea of combining pleasure and profit.
Just in their spare time, really, a lot of these
Right. However, usually the traditional person, I mean, Lucretti's been making baskets all her life. The economy probably won't affect the sale of her baskets. She works on limited production. It's true, probably the reason she started making baskets has evolved and changed, but her basic styles are the same, and probably her basic feelings are, and the way she looks at her baskets is probably pretty much the same.
When I go to craft shows in, like, Jacksonville...
There's so many... What is a craft show? There's so many different types.
But what I see is a lot of the same sort of stuff over and over again. Where do new ideas come from? How do you find new ideas?
Well, okay. This is the way I look at crafts. It's like the same as anything else. There are always forerunners out there, people who are willing to work on the edge. You have that with your jazz musicians. And those are a limited number of people. They're innovators. They're people who sort of dare to think freely. But all craft structures come from more or less a traditional base. I mean, the techniques, the structures, maybe even the materials. The innovators take those ideas and manipulate them and work on the edge. But then there's a whole middle ground of people that sort of work within that same framework. So, yes, you do see a lot of the same ideas. For example, basketry. You've probably seen a million Appalachian baskets in the past, 6 years, all with varying degrees of color, materials, texture, etc. And that's because the framework sets certain parameters, and so you have to work within those parameters. I mean, what can you do? You could still take the Appalachian basket and maybe do it with copper wire or electrician's plastic, and that would be neat, but you're still working within the same framework. Somebody who's working more on the edge would look at that structure, look at the materials, and probably isolate both elements and come up with a non-functional, maybe more sculptural idea using non-traditional materials, either an adaptation of a traditional structure or a non-traditional structure, and there you've got the person who's making like a different statement. But I think a lot of us have come from the traditional background in terms of being trained to do as craftspeople are trained to make crafts. I know that's what I learned in school. It's like you have to have that firm background before you can go off.
What do you see your role here? What's the final outcome of the work you're doing at the Folklife Center?
Okay, my role has really been almost as a bridge between the traditional artist and the artist who is the interpreter of tradition. I sort of see both worlds and kind of have been, can bring both worlds into practical practice, maybe from the point of view of the program, like how can they both fit into our framework here? Both influence each other tremendously. There's no way you can isolate the traditional artist and the contemporary artist. The two go together, and what is that connection? And that's, I think, probably is one function I've been able to sort of at least work in, particularly within the crafts area. That's been my major area of emphasis with the program, is working with the crafts of the festival. And that's been a problem that we've had. Most artists are trained to think that if they do baskets that are traditional in structure, then they are traditional artists. However, as a folklorist, you realize that tradition has a lot more meaning and depth to it than just that particular level. So working with both groups and explaining those differences and helping to communicate what our program is doing, I think has gone a long way in, being diplomatic, providing room for us to, talk with each group, whatever. It's hard for me to say it exactly.
Do you see young people with the perseverance that it takes to become traditional artists that are paying attention to the sorts of things that will continue that kind of tradition? In your work, do you see many young people?
No, see, that's what's so sad. I think if you talk with a lot of LaCreedy's the first to tell you. No one in her family's really taken an interest, and she's tried to get people in the community to take an interest. The people who want to learn from LaCreedy are a lot of the basket makers in Florida who've either come out of an art school background or who have gotten in on the basketry bandwagon and realized LaCreedy is a genuine artist. She has much to offer, but it's not people from her own culture. And the same thing we found with some of the Seminoles that we were working with. For example, Ethel Santiago is a basket maker. She would love to spend more time learning more about basketry from her own culture, but as far as the young people coming into it, she says they're all going off the reservation. They're finding other things to do. As she put it, kind of white man society is creeping in, and I think that's a problem within every culture and within a lot of the traditional craftspeople find.
The process of transmission transcends obviously the basket or whatever the product is. And I wonder if something valuable is being lost in all of that, in the fact that the kids are going off to do something else. Are they still going to feel some of those values that would have been transmitted during the process of Granny teach me how to make a basket or,
But see, there are other things that they are taking with them. Perhaps maybe LaCreedy isn't teaching her family how to make baskets, but she's certainly passing on her food ways. She's certainly passing on, I know she talks about the games she played as a child, and her grandchildren are still playing those games. Some things endure and some things don't, and it may be where one tradition appears to be dying out, it's just changing, but another thing is coming foreground.
So it's not, because you hear this a lot, that yeah, the young people are going away and they're not paying attention to the old values and the old ways, but maybe that isn't so much a
I have a feeling you come full circle to that sort of reality after a time and reach a point in your life cycle where you start thinking back about the things you learned at home and about the things your parents did. And that's how I think the Florida Folklife Program performs like a real valuable service. It puts people in touch with that feeling, or at least serves as a reminder to, hey, here you come to our festival and you see a lot of traditions being expressed and you hear about things being interpreted, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden you start thinking about your own background and wondering, okay, we always ate cornbread. Maybe could that be like a traditional thing in our family? Or maybe suddenly remembering that your father did some special thing when he gardened, but just sort of assuming that was something everyone did. And then you start identifying those elements in your own life, and I think it sort of connects you back sort of past, present, and future. It's a connection base there.
It gives you some deeper values in your own life.
Right.
That you hadn't really thought about before. That's probably enough.
Okay.
Unless you've got something else you want to get into, they're ready for lunch. And that's, I think that's essentially what
you're
trying to get.
Yeah, I think that's, I can't think of anything else
anything
to
more,
say.
No, I don't want to hold up lunch.
Well, let's discuss food, Landon, I mean.
Well, all right, food.
Just for 2 seconds, I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I've been thinking about it a lot, and having worked on this museum exhibit, one of the things I was talking with Ormond about yesterday was the fact that even when a lot of other traditions are discarded, food traditions remain. And that's, you know, it's like food. Food is so essential to life, and that may be one of the reasons that you find food traditions sort of continuing. And I started thinking about it. You can give up lots of things, but food, depending on the availability of materials and equipment, you know, it's you still want to kind of keep it the same. And like with the Vietnamese community in Pensacola, they had to leave a lot of their things when they came over. They found the bamboo there is pretty much similar to the types they had at home. They're making the rice washing baskets, so they have them there. You know, they can get the rice. They can get different things that were familiar to their diets. And that's just real interesting to me. Of all the things they had to give up, they have found a way to bring small elements of it back into being. I don't know.
Well, that's, it's got to be important to them because they must be in a terrible state of flux, and there must be a lot of anxiety being in a new place, and to be able to do that 3 times a day, to have something that you feel comfortable with, really, I mean, as comfortable as anything in your life, it must mean a lot.
Well, you've eaten all over the state, so you know.
That's true, but now talking about food more, Americans, their food traditions are kind of pitiful, aren't they?
Well, you know, you start thinking about now, what are Americans like? What are Floridians? When you start thinking about the state, you realize Floridians are a lot of things because they're just as many people. I'm not a native Floridian, but I've been here so long, I think of myself as being a Floridian. But then you start thinking of all the ethnic groups that are part of Florida and the Native American groups that are here and the retirees coming down, and you realize all of that is Florida. So what is American food?
Well,
you know,
you think of Sara Lee and,
and
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's all American, just basic food.
Fast food.
But it's not really fair, is it? That's what you're saying.
Right.
To think of that as American
food,
because there's so much more going on.
Well, what would you consider a food-based tradition from your own family?
My family is pretty down the road, middle-class stuff. My father used to have cornbread and buttermilk. I guess that's...
Yeah. See, my family is very typically Southern, and I grew up with what might be considered a lot of cracker-style foods. And it's real funny when you start thinking about that from the perspective that a folklorist would look at it, and you go, oh, my God, look at this.
Yeah. And that's your function here, is to really make people start looking at their own funny little ways of doing
it
and realizing that that's not just...
Well, the thing that's so great about folklore is everybody has some element of folklore in their history, and it's just a matter of identifying it and relating to it. It's not something that's an isolate kind of thing. We all have it.
All right.
All right.
I think
let's go eat.
Let's eat.